Welcome to the Center for Spiritual Living Santa Rosa, a spiritual community that promotes global transformation through personal transformation. At the center, we are motivated by a compelling vision of a healthy, loving world, which we call the Global Heart Vision. This vision inspires us to bring the gifts of compassion and loving kindness to the world through our ministries and teaching. What you are about to hear is a recording of a message delivered at the Center for Spiritual Living Santa Rosa. Feel welcomed. Feel at home.
Thank you very much, Gary and the gentlemen of the band. It's so nice of you to be here. I know our music director, Chris, appreciates it. So he can have a vacation and leave us in very good musical hands. Thank you. Good morning. Our topic is compassion. I was thinking about one of my all-time favorite books, Beyond Courage. And in it, the author asks some important questions about living with a heart wide open, a compassionate heart. They're rhetorical questions. You don't have to answer them out loud. But have you ever been so sick that you lost courage? Or have you ever been so emotionally chaotic or so unhappy that you even flirted with the idea of ending your life? Or have you ever been so poor that you didn't know where your next meal would come from or where you would sleep? Have you ever had somebody really close to you hurt, either on purpose or by accident? Have you lost someone precious to you? Or have you witnessed somebody close go through any of this? Or have you watched it from a distance happening in your neighborhood? The chances are that you and I have met suffering, either face to face in our very own lives, or we've witnessed them in someone else. And these experiences, these are the ones that most likely qualify us to be compassionate beings. Compassion is when we can identify with, even to the point of feeling, the suffering of others, accompanied with a desire to lessen that suffering or end it. Being compassionate with ourselves, it turns out, can be even more challenging than being compassionate with others. I was thinking about our center and its teaching. We have a teaching here that says, no matter what we are going through, that we are, spiritually speaking, whole, perfect, and complete, nevertheless. And it can be difficult holding those two ideas. It can be difficult being compassionate with ourselves when the whole, perfect, complete inside doesn't match what's happening on the outside. It goes like this. I'm whole, perfect, and complete, and yet I often make choices that end up bad. I'm whole, perfect, and complete, and sometimes I mess up terribly, and I hurt myself, and I hurt others, and sometimes it's accidental, and sometimes, darn it, it's on purpose. I'm whole, perfect, and complete, and sometimes I just miss the mark. I do less than I can, less than I ought to, less than I wanted to. And I'm not always very forgiving and compassionate with myself when that outer life doesn't match the spiritual truth I'm learning about myself. And I've been wondering if the way we show compassion for ourselves and the way we show compassion for others is connected. I confess that when other people mess up, I don't always go straight to they are whole, perfect, and complete in my thinking. And also when I've messed up, I don't go straight to my spiritual wholeness. And my thinking inside can be pretty toxic and self-critical. It is connected. And there's room for improvement. We can work on both at the same time. More compassion for others may help me be more compassionate to myself and vice versa. So we're going to explore it even more today. Look at both sides and discover maybe what can open the heart of compassion for us today. So I invite you to think about some more questions with me. Think about a time, if you will, when you did mess up. You know, have you ever got yourself into trouble? And what was it like for you? What did you need from people at that time? And if there was someone there who believed in you, when you couldn't believe in yourself, what was that like? Or the other side, what about when other people have messed up? You know, I mean, think about when you heard gossip that somebody was messing up. Or you knew about a colleague or a neighbor or a friend or a public figure getting into trouble. How did you deal with it in your thinking? Did you go to the highest possible thought? And what do you think they needed from people? And I wonder if there was someone there for them who stood with them, who believed in them when they couldn't believe in themselves. A long time ago, I messed up. Not just the one time, but I'm remembering a particular time when I messed up. And I asked my mentor at the time, what should I do to get through this? And she said to me, before you get to the what to do part, first, surround yourself with dolphins and not with sharks. Yeah, you know, she said, because if you're bleeding, the sharks will eat you alive. But the dolphins will accompany you until you're safe again. Oh my God, I've never forgotten that, you know. Surround yourself with dolphins. I know what she's talking about. Because when I'm full to the brim with the energy of guilt, you know, that guilt energy, it attracts and demands punishment. It's bleeding. So who are the sharks? Well, they aren't bad people. They're just likely the people who are reflecting back to me something I already do to myself and to other people. I feed on their guilt. And it's not helpful to do that. That's how you know when you're being a shark for someone else, you know. You feed on their guilt. Because you know, it shows up like this. Maybe you want to know more of the dirty details, even more than you need to. And maybe you're getting into it because at the same time you're afraid it will happen to you and you're pushing at it. Or maybe there's a kind of gladness in you that they're getting their comeuppance. And you know you're being a dolphin for someone when what they did cannot change your mind about who they are spiritually. And you don't need to know what happened. And if you do know what happened, you sense it's not about whether you approve or not, and you don't have to agree, but your heart message to them is, I will stand with you so that you do not have to face this alone. See, compassion is not pity. Compassion is to stand with someone in their experience The Spirit in you recognizes the Spirit in them. So the first thing to do is to surround yourself with dolphins. And who the dolphins are in your life, we'll get into that. Maybe it'll become a little clearer later on in the message. The second thing that we can do to open up the compassion center in our hearts, in us and in the people around us, is to stop the bleeding. And one way of doing that is by saying sorry when you've made a mistake. To make amends as quickly and as safely as possible, unless, of course, doing so might cause further harm. There is a website, it's called Very Well Mind, one word. Very Well Mind. And there's an article on it, The Importance of Apologizing, by Elizabeth Scott. She writes, many people have complicated feelings about apologies. Not all of our thoughts and feelings about apologies line up. Some of us were forced to apologize as children when we hurt someone. And some of us apologized freely and felt immediately better after having done so. Some people feel shamed by apologizing, while others feel ashamed until they have done so. A popular movie decades ago declared that love means never having to say you're sorry, while many relationship experts warn us that never apologizing in a relationship, I add in life, is a sure way to risk losing it. Now she gives some positive outcomes from giving a sincere, and later on she qualifies sincere apologies. We may have learned about the need for apologizing when we've hurt a friend, accidentally or otherwise. But do you know why apologizing is really important? And what function a good apology serves? Researchers and psychologists have pinpointed some important reasons why apologizing is necessary, even when social rules have been violated. Here are some good things that can come about. Number one, apologizing when you've broken a rule of social conduct, you know, cutting in front of a line, for example, it reestablishes that you know, you understand what the rules are. And that you agree that they should be upheld. And this allows other people to feel safe that you agree that hurtful behavior isn't okay. Number two, apologies reestablish dignity for those you have hurt. She says, letting the injured party know that you know it was your fault and not theirs helps them feel better, and it can help them save face. Number three, apologizing helps repair relationships because it gets people back to talking and it allows comfort to emerge again. And fourth, a sincere apology allows you to let people know you're not particularly proud of what you did and you won't be repeating it. And that lets people know you're the kind of person who is generally careful not to hurt others. And it redirects focus from what you did to what you stand for. You know, another way of saying all of this is confess. You know, just confess. You know, especially if it's bigger than one person or bigger than one offense. And what do I mean by confess? I mean, share your burdens. Unburden your heart. My grandmother used to say, a burden shared is a burden halved. I'm not forgetting that too. And if you grew up Catholic like I did, and if you loved your Catholic upbringing like I did, then maybe you'll remember the tremendous unburdening power of sharing your mistakes and errors and then following that up with spiritual practice. Now, at the center, we don't have confessionals, but we do have practitioners. And you may have a prayer partner, or you may have a spiritual best friend. These are dolphins. I'm talking about people who you can safely and sanely share your heart with, because sharing your heart dissolves the tension, and it can be a beautiful act of self-compassion, and it's also good for the person who hears the confession. And by the way, there is a special way to hear, to listen to confession. Think of the dolphins again. Think of non-attacking. Think of supporting. Think of supporting. And we'll talk about that style of listening in just a moment. But if you're new here and you don't know what that term practitioner is, let me take a moment to describe the way they work. They are the dolphins that accompany us through the service. You see them sitting at the edge of the room in prayer, and they're the ones who come up on stage like Peggy did and do a spiritual mind treatment and affirmative prayer. And so they serve on a volunteer basis. And after each service in the chapel, they volunteer there so you can go into the chapel and sit there for 5 minutes and say what is on your heart and say what it is you need prayer for. And then they will pray with you, and you can get the experience of somebody totally listening to you and then supporting you. And it's a free service. And the other way they work too is that they make themselves available for hire, you know, on a fee-for-service basis, for one-on-one spiritual coaching. And most practitioners either offer a sliding scale for people with financial challenges, or they will accept some kind of service agreement. In other words, they will work with you. Now, how would you choose a practitioner? Well, very much in the same way you would choose a physician or a coach. You could try them out for free on Sunday in the chapel. Also, you can interview them. You can call them up and ask questions about their fees, about what you can expect when you work with them. And their pictures and their business cards are all up in the social hall on the wall next to the coffee service. Now, the other side of confessing is listening. Very important. And now you and I don't have to be trained professionals to listen. However, there is a way to listen compassionately. I was remembering what a colleague of mine said to me that really helped me understand what compassionate listening may be. And he said, "Edward, people do not need your opinions. They do not need your judgments. They probably don't even need your advice. They need your love. They need you to listen. They need to be seen and heard and known and witnessed. They need you to know that they are whole, perfect, and complete, no matter what is going on in their life." It made me think of times in my life, difficult times in my life. And I remembered how much I really did want to be listened to, just to have someone to hear me out. And then when somebody did hear me out, I felt like I had received compassion. I felt like I had been helped. I felt like I had been cared for. Listening carefully to others, it turns out, builds connection. It deepens understanding. It activates caring. It inspires courage. And it produces deep, soulful inner peace. both for the one listening and the one being listened to. I'm remembering my own training as a practitioner. You know, I loved learning everything, especially I loved learning about how to listen. You know, so simple, so obvious, so effective. And so when I became a practitioner and I was seeing people on a one-on-one basis, I used my new skill. I listened. And you know, people would write to me often and they would tell me how very much I had helped them when really all that I had done was listen to them and remembered while they were talking that there was something within them, whole, perfect, and complete at every point in their journey. I learned how to say to people, tell me everything. Start from the beginning. Take as much time as you like. Leave no details out. And they would go like this. I had to choose to be interested. I learned it in practitioner training in a center for spiritual living. But in retrospect, I realized I had also learned it from my grandmother a long time before. You know, if ever I had a broken heart or some other complicated problem in my youth, I would go visit my grandmother and she would listen attentively. She would nod frequently, as understanding, and even express appropriate agreement when I was frustrated or outraged or indignant. And all throughout, her response was always the same, regardless of how serious the problem was, regardless how impossible the situation was, regardless of how chaotic my mind or emotions were, her simple response was almost always, it will all work out in the end. It always does. There were times when that response was so frustrating to me. But thinking back, I would say, now I see how much more I preferred her non-fixing response to my sharing over the advice of so many well-meaning metaphysical friends who sometimes ask, have you tried this? Have you tried that? Have you thought this? Have you changed your mind? Just think that. So today, I leave you with a question and maybe even a challenge. The question for this week for you, if you choose to accept it. Do you try to fix people when they talk to you about their difficulties? How might it be for you and for me, for us, this week, if we offer no advice, no opinion on anything, and simply open the compassionate center of our hearts to listen to each other? It could be amazing. I invite you to breathe in with me and to exhale, letting your eyes close as we let go of everything and turn within to acknowledge that source from which we come, the living spirit, the divine, the eternal presence that is everywhere, all of the time, the higher power. When I think of the word, the phrase everywhere present, I'm reminded that means right here where I am and right there where you are. So I embrace that identity. Like it says in the scriptures, that I live and breathe and move and have my being inside the divine presence. I remember that so that I may realize that what is flowing through my mind as this prayer is being responded to through the good pleasure of the living presence. And so with care and mindfulness and humility, I plant the seed in consciousness that I am willing and ready to further open my compassionate heart to hear, to listen, and to understand, so that I may be guided by the love of the divine to do what is mine to do in my life and for others. Today, through this prayer, I am feeling my connection to the hearts all around me, to nature itself, and I'm giving thanks for this life that I'm living and for this mind in which I'm thinking. And as we heard in the opening prayer, I release this word of prayer into the law of mind, meaning it is not I, but the power within that does the work. I let it go. I let it be. And together we say, and so it is. I invite you to take a deep breath in, followed by a sigh. And we use that movement of breath to make the transition to our spiritual practice of sharing, circulation. As you prepare your gift, I invite you to begin feeling the gratitude that we generate in the sanctuary by giving and loving and receiving all at the same time. We are building the Center for Spiritual Living in its physical form. And we are building the Center for Spiritual Living in its spiritual form through our prayers and love. It all counts. I invite the ushers to stand, and won't you please take your gift in your hand and say after me, I bless this gift. I send it forth to heal and prosper. It does amazing work in the world. And so it is. Ushers, please receive the gift.